Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Daily Tech News Show is made possible by its listeners. Thanks to all of you, including Miss Music Teacher James C. Smith and Miranda Janelle. Coming up on DTNS, we sum up the benchmarks for the RTX 4090. Summary of the sum up, they're good. Roku's getting into the smart home business, and Microsoft put DALL-E 2 into a design app and into Bing and the Edge browser. Where will this stop? This is the Daily Tech News for Wednesday, October 12th, 2022 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
In Salt Lake City, I'm Scott Johnson.
I'm the producer, Roger Chen.
And happy birthday, Sarah Lane. She will return to the show after a well-deserved break tomorrow, but she's taken her last day off for her birthday. So happy birthday, Sarah. Meanwhile, we will celebrate her birthday with a few tech things you should know. Apple and Microsoft support passkeys already. And now Google has announced support for passkeys is launched on Android and the Chrome browser. So that magical world of passkey interaction we described earlier this year is now available if you want to get into the beta. Google backs up passkeys to the Google Password Manager in case of device lockout. So that's something you should be aware of if you choose to live in that universe. With passkey, when you log in on a phone, it tells you, hey, I'm going to use passkey on this site. Is that cool? And then if it's cool, you confirm with however you lock your device. So fingerprint, face ID, passcode, whatever. To log in on a desktop, you can scan a QR code to your device and then proceed with the fingerprint, face scan, etc. If you want to start using passkeys on Android and Chrome right now, you need to either be in the Google Play Services beta, if you want to use it on Android, and or Chrome Canary, if you want to use it on Chrome. A stable launch is expected by the end of the year, though. So if you don't want to get on the beta, you shouldn't have to wait long. If you get in on those betas, though, you, as an Android user, could use Passkey to sign in on Safari on a Mac. Or you, as a Canary Chrome user on Windows, could use Passkeys that are stored on your iOS phone. It's a wonderful world.
Are we actually talking about a potential present and future where all of these password managers talk to each other and it's no longer a bunch of gardens?
Just need the apps and the websites to join now. That's it.
I'm all into this. That sounds great. Well, let's talk about a couple of those companies further. Apple, Google, and Samsung have announced software updates coming soon to enable 5G support in handsets in India. Phones sold in India have gotten 5G-capable hardware before, but there hasn't been 5G service until recently. India's two largest carriers, Reliance Jio and Airtel, have launched 5G service in a few cities over the last couple of weeks. Apple's updates will come in December. Samsung and Google did not provide specific timeframes.
But probably by December is when I'm going to get. Netflix has joined Barb, not from Stranger Things, not Scott's old high school newspaper, but a nonprofit organization that measures TV ratings in the UK. First time Netflix has officially joined a ratings organization. Barb will begin including Netflix in its published ratings starting the second week of November, but it's got some things to say about what it's counted already. Barb says Netflix is the most accessed streaming service in the UK right now. And even though it lags behind broadcasters like the BBC, it accounts for 8% of all UK TV viewing. Nielsen offers Netflix ratings in the US. If you're like, wait, I thought Netflix did get rated elsewhere. Netflix doesn't cooperate with Nielsen and even sometimes disputes their accuracy. But joining Barb means they probably won't dispute their accuracy, at least not publicly.
I was the paper cartoonist, by the way, for the Barb.
Oh, of course.
That's what
you
I did.
Were. Yeah.
Yeah. Weird kid. The memory chip maker SK Hynix confirmed it received a 1-year temporary exemption from new U.S. rules restricting chip making equipment from being sent to China. The exemption will let SK Hynix supply its own China-based facilities without additional licensing requirements from the U.S. Commerce Department.
And expect a bunch of Huawei people to be hanging around outside the SK Hynix plant now. Yeah. Like, hey, you mind if I just take a look around? Apple analyst Ming-Chi Kuo predicts that Apple could supply the U.S. market with devices entirely supplied outside of China within the next 3 to 5 years. The move would represent up to 30% of its global shipments. This is a great piece of perspective setting from Ming-Chi Kuo. If you're thinking, like, why doesn't everybody just stop making things in China? Apple could do it 30% in 3 to 5 years. Supply chains, they're complicated. They're hard to move around. Kuo does expect MacBook production could move to Thailand, and that India's Tata Group could work with either Pegatron or Wistron, or maybe both, to expand Indian iPhone production to be enough that they could export iPhones. Right now, the goal is to make iPhones for domestic use in India, but India could become an exporter of iPhones within the next 3 to 5 years.
And they'll have the 5G to match.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. And it'll be turned on by then. All right. Let's talk a little more. We were going to have, if you were paying attention, you might have noticed that we mentioned Will Smith would be coming on the show today to talk about the RTX 4090. He was unable to join us. We're going to reschedule that. But RTX 4090 still getting a lot of buzz. It's the latest flagship. We mentioned briefly some of the benchmarks and early reviews out there, but Roger Chang has been digging into those benchmarks and reviews to give us a little more detail today. So Roger, tell us what it is, what it does, and is it worth it? What do you found?
So quick review, the RTX 4090 is NVIDIA's flagship GPU based on the new Ada Lovelace microarchitecture. It is a monster both physically as well as performance-wise, and all the reviews so far have said that the card does live up to the expectations that people put on it. It has both with DLSS turned on, which is the upscaling technology NVIDIA uses to get higher image quality out of lower resolution, so you keep your high frame rates, whatever game that you play. Onwards, you're seeing anywhere from 60 to 90% increase, depending on the game.
Nice.
Increase, and that's with ray tracing turned on. It gets even crazier if you use our DLSS compared to the previous 3090 Ti, as well as the 3080 chips. And it is a screamer. So the guys over at IGN, Chris Koch and Bowmore, managed to get Cyberpunk 2077, which is one of the games that allows you to crank everything to 100 to really kind of buff test your machine. They got 120 frames per second at 4K resolution with all the eye candy turned on, ray tracing turned on, with DLSS enabled. So that gives you an idea of how incredibly powerful this card is. It is rendering things so fast and so much that in many cases you're limited by your CPU. In other words, your CPU is bottlenecking the system because it can't give the GPU enough information to chew. And so in one retrospect, if you don't have an up-to-spec PC, if you don't have a high-end CPU, a latest-gen motherboard, you might be doing yourself a disservice, even if you want this card, because the rest of your system can't keep up.
Yeah, and you don't put a Porsche engine in a Nova, people.
Yeah, this hasn't been a problem for a while. So hearing this in these reviews is interesting, because prior to this, it was like, CPUs are ahead of the game. You kind of don't need to swap into that out. You can live with this core machine for a long time. Just keep swapping GPUs. That may not be true for much longer, when this thing hits.
Yeah, I mean, there is a limit to your CPU not being able to support this, because you first of all have to have a big enough machine with three slots to handle this monster. Yeah. So, and you have to have an 850-watt power supply. So likely you're going to have a better CPU if you've got those two things to begin with, or you're building a whole new machine from scratch, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and three slots, just so you know, it physically needs the three slots plates on the back of your PC, but the fan juts out half a slot in over to the right. So technically, it's 3.5 slots.
Okay, good point.
So it's a very big card, and the 850 is the minimum PSU that they recommend, because it does have a max draw of 450 watts, which is a lot.
Now, everybody is complaining about this price because it's $1,600. From what you can tell, if you can afford it, which is a big if, I get it, but if you could afford it, is it worth $1,600?
So this is the thing. From all respects, yes. If you have a machine that can feed this beast the information it needs, and you want to do the 4K gaming with all the eye candy, and let's say you got a side business of doing Twitch streaming or Adobe After Effects, it's actually not that bad. The original 3090 released at $1,500 when it came out 3 years ago, and the 3090 Ti initially shipped at $2,000.
Right.
So for $1,600, it's not a bad price for what you. In other words, for what you're paying, you are getting what you pay for.
If you, now, whether or not you you're can, saying if you have the means, you highly recommend.
Yeah, yeah, if you have the means, you can get it. Sure. And the thing about these video card upgrades, there's going to be a big middle pack of players or gamers or even creators who this is going to be overkill for what you're doing. If you're already enjoying, you know, Cyberpunk 2077 at 1440p and you're doing so at 120 frames per second, and you've just had to turn off a few things here and there to make that work, you're probably not going to be able to plug this in and go, wow, I'm so glad I spent $1,500 on this very minimal change.
Totally.
But you'll know who you are if you're getting this.
And, right? You know, I'm glad you brought that up. If you're a person that's still on 1440p or 1080p gaming, you don't have a 4K, you know, high frequency, you know, 120 plus refresh rate gaming monitor, It's really not a jump.
It's not worth the extra cost. Yeah,
it's not worth the extra cost because you're not benefiting from this card's power, and your card already, if your card can already do that gaming at 60 frames plus, you're not going to see a benefit just plunking down $1,600.
This is not everyone should scrape together $1,600, go drive an Uber and buy one right now. This is if you have this set of requirements and this set of existing specs, then and you have $1,600, it's worth it. That's what it sounds like to me.
And I will add this. As of right now, Best Buy, which is the partner for NVIDIA for the Founders Edition for this card, is sold out.
Mm. Yeah.
That's the thing. They're going to be a little hard to get at first. Maybe not as bad as the long haul supply chain issues we saw a couple of years ago, but it'll be, you know, if you didn't already get yours on order, you're probably
This is because of demand, though.
Yeah. Actual demand, just regular demand. I know. Isn't that great?
Amazing. All right. Let's see if we got a demand for some new smart home things.
Why not? The month that everybody announces all their new stuff, Roku also announced some things. 8 new smart home devices that you can control from the Roku OS. The device includes smart bulbs with white and color versions. So that's cool for those looking for that. Light strips, indoor and outdoor smart plugs, a video doorbell, a floodlight camera, indoor and outdoor cameras as well, and an indoor camera that can pan and tilt. Actually, I think I want one of these. You can also control them with Roku Smart Home app on your Android or iOS phone and by voice on the Roku remote. So you just do that in the house. Roku partnered with Wise, to make this line. So if they look familiar, that's probably why.
I want them to partner with Waze so they could also do
navigation. Soon as I saw that, I'm like, I don't know what road's the best one to take. Anyway, Roku integration adds some interesting features. If you use a Roku-powered TV device, so for instance, the video doorbell can send a picture-in-picture view to a television and alert you when it sees packages or pets or what have you. They are not locked down to just Roku, by the way. The devices are also compatible with Google Assistant. Amazon compatibility is coming in early November. That also makes sense because they're partnering with Wise and they already do all that too. Do they support Matter? No. Sorry to tell you, Roku is a member of the Matter working group, but the devices are not yet certified as Matter compliant. That could change.
All right.
The devices range from $14 to $100, and Roku says there will be a cloud subscription service for storing cameras and their images from the cameras, rather. There's no price for what that service is going to be yet. I'm guessing it'll be in line with what others are. You can order online or wait for them to show up at Walmart on October 17th.
Yeah, so this is interesting if you're in the smart home marketplace, although you can get all of these things from other manufacturers, including Wise, who's making these for Roku. But I think it's interesting that Roku is seeing this as its next step. So the way I think of it is Roku made devices and made money off devices until they started to max out the amount of money they could make off devices. Then they started selling services and advertising until the advertising market started to get a little thin out there. And I don't think they've maxed out services and advertising, but as that money becomes a little harder to increase, they're moving into smart home, which makes sense. If you've got the biggest screen in the house, I think it makes sense to be the one to say, hey, we'll put some camera stuff up there for you. They're not the only one that could do this, but they are the ones who own the whole system in this case, right? With the Roku OS on your TV, as well as the Roku camera. So there's a compelling thing for some people like, oh, I have a Roku TV. I'll get that Roku camera because at least I know it'll work. Now, granted, if they were Matter compliant, then they should work with everything too. But, you know, the way where our minds work, we'll see Roku and Roku and go for that. They'll probably sell a few of these things.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, but I see Roku staying in the pack despite inroads made by big companies with big names, and staying in there as a device you can get for your television, a TV integrated with their services. This stuff coming down the road, I don't know why. I just like seeing the little guy who was there early stay in it and not get pushed out by Apple and Google and Amazon and everybody else. So
the little guy who was there like Google, the little search engine that took down AltaVista.
That's right.
Yeah. Or Apple, that little upstart computer maker that.
Yeah, those little guys who just.
Or Microsoft, you know, DeskView was a much better operating system, but that little Microsoft, they were all little once, is my point.
Sure. Yeah. But I think Roku, you know, look, just they're a name you recognize and they've earned it, and I hope they do well. I'm rooting for them personally.
Yeah. Beatmaster asks a very important question. Roku doesn't have a particularly good or bad security history. They really don't have one. And Wyze has a bad one. So hopefully Roku can improve on that, but that's a question. And WScottus1 had a really interesting thought in the chat about like Airbnb owners who have Roku TVs maybe wanting to buy the cameras and stuff for people who stay in their Airbnbs. If you have thoughts like this or anything about the show, send us an email. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
This podcast is supported by Tools and Weapons, the podcast hosted by Microsoft Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Right now on a special edition of Tools and Weapons, Brad Smith is sharing a vision for what Microsoft calls the new AI economy. It's an idea rooted in technological revolutions of the past, like the printing press, which created a vibrant marketplace of related innovations, ultimately leading to an explosion of books and readers. But he doesn't just give a history lesson. In the episode, Brad lays out the tangible ways that Microsoft is providing infrastructure and other support to those leading the charge of the new AI economy. And he explains the importance of using that infrastructure to ensure equitable access to AI to people all over the world. To stay current on insights from voices at the center of the conversation on AI, follow or subscribe to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you like to listen.
Microsoft announced a bunch of new hardware at Ignite. They also announced software and services. So let's run through them. Let's start with the hardware, Scott.
All right, that sounds good. The Surface Laptop 5 now runs on Intel's 12th gen i5 and i7 processors. No more option for AMD. Sorry, guys. Mm. But you also get Thunderbolt 4 and Wi-Fi 6. The display has a Dolby Vision IQ support, but overall, it's pretty similar to the latest version, or the last version before this one. You can pre-order now. It's available in 13.5 inches starting at $1,000 US and 15 inches starting at $1,200 US. Shipping begins October 25th.
Yeah, so that's a very minor update. Surface Pro 9 and 9 with 5G are going to replace the Surface Pro and Surface Pro X lines, respectively. The Surface Pro 9 is replacing the Surface Pro and gets the Intel 12th gen processors. And the 9 with 5G replaces the X line and gets Microsoft's SQ3 ARM chip. No, you can't get 5G on the Surface Pro 9 with Intel, only on the one with the ARM processor. That ARM chip is Qualcomm Snapdragon 8 CX Gen 3, but customized by Microsoft to work well with Windows. And by all accounts, it works really well. Both Surface Pro 9s have 13-inch 2880 by 1920 displays, up to 120 hertz refresh rate. The Intel models also add Dolby Vision IQ support. They both weigh around 880 grams or so. A neural processing unit is coming to the 5G model that can do things like adjust your eye contact, automatically frame shots, blur backgrounds, remove background audio for Microsoft Teams, but also for Zoom and other things because it's happening on the chip. Surface Pro 9 starts at $1,000 and the Pro 9 with 5G starts at $1,300. You can pre-order those now, also shipping October 25th.
Big day for all these. Now, if you're an artist out there and you're like, man, I sure wish the studio was a cooler device, the Surface Studio. Good news, maybe. Microsoft announced the Studio 2 Plus. This has a 28-inch 4500 by 3000 touchscreen display. This runs on Intel's 11th gen i7 CPU and NVIDIA's RTX 3060 GPU, which is a great card. I know we've been, you know, a little overshadowed today by new GPUs, but this is a very fast card with a terabyte of storage. It adds Dolby Vision, auto color management, Wi-Fi 6, and Bluetooth 5.1, along with Dolby Atmos speakers. It's got three USB-C Thunderbolt 4 ports and can support up to three 4K 60 hertz external displays. You can pre-order this now. This ships October 25th as well for $4,299 or $4,499 with a stylus, keyboard, and mouse included. They didn't say anything about whether they're including that weird dial puck thing that they had on the initial Surface Studio.
Yeah, didn't
mention
the dial anymore either. I would have guessed the 9 and 9 with 5G because of the NPU, because of the improved SQ3 chip would be the one that most people would say is the most improved. And none of these are huge leaps forward. But you surprised me. You said you were inspired by the upgrade to the Studio 2 Plus, and it's using 11th gen Intel and a 3060 GPU. So tell me why.
Well, here's the reason. I always kind of secretly root for the Surface line, all of them actually, to be more creative tool focused. And once in a while, they get it right. The Surface 2 way back in the day was an amazing stylus pen combo screen thing. And then they changed it. It got weird and latency ridden issues and all this. And it just wasn't as good anymore. The first one of these came out, the original Surface Studio. And I got really excited. The screen laid down. You could fire up Photoshop or Clip Studio, whatever it is you're using. And you get your stylus and bam, your big art studio, desktop based art studio at your fingertips. But it was way underpowered, horrible specs. It wasn't great. So I was like, well, we'll see what things, you know, may change down the line. As much as people are using iPad Pros and even Surface laptops and other smaller devices to do this work on now, and even Wacom's got a few options that are both, some based in Linux, some based in Windows. There's still, I think, a need for a big, I got this whole desk dedicated to my production stuff. And I always just think just maybe these Surface Studio models are going to be the bomb when it comes to that. But they always just kind of limp over the line of adequate specs. Like this is a huge jump over the original Studio, obviously, but it's not a huge jump in terms of some other competition out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know that I would say, well, yeah, pull the trigger on this, go for it. I still don't know how this pen behaves. It was bad latency on the last one. So maybe they fix that. That may fix a lot of things, but I don't know. I just keep hoping that these could be cooler and that they would throw more at them. They certainly charge for them. This is not cheap.
Yeah.
By any stretch. So they're actually going for that kind of price point that people are used to paying for an expensive Mac and an expensive Wacom tablet and all the bits and pieces that go with it. But I'm not sure you're getting that full value here quite yet. I still root for it, though. I want to see what
you'll always have the parts for it, though. Because
that's true.
Very old parts. All right. Now to software and services. Microsoft announced two design products, Microsoft Designer for the web and Image Creator for Bing and Microsoft Edge. Yeah, the browser. Both of these use OpenAI's DALL-E 2, which Microsoft has been the client for. They are the ones who are paying to use DALL-E 2. Microsoft Designer is a web app similar to Canva for quick designs of things like posters, invitations, graphics, stuff like that. You can start with text, just describe what you want it to make. The generator will give you an image, and then you can modify it from there. You can also use stock art, user-created art, just like you would with any other design app. It's free during a private preview period and will eventually be included in Microsoft 365, although they'll have a limited version for free for people to try as well. Image Creator is available to everybody for free. It's going to show up in the Edge browser and in the Bing search engine and works like a front end to DALL-E 2. You put in the text, you get an image. No editing stuff like you have in design, but otherwise you're going to get the AI created stuff. It'll launch in preview in select locations so they can make sure that they keep misuse down before they roll it out more widely. Microsoft's also launching a new hub for all of Microsoft's design related products at create.microsoft.com. What do you think of this? We've talked a lot about using algorithms to generate stuff. But what do you think of Microsoft's take on it?
Well, I would say to all my artist friends out there and to myself included, you might see this and go, great, now I can just, they're not even going to use me for their cool flyer. They'll just make a generated piece of art on the fly. And now they've got this thing working in Designer and they don't need me even more than they didn't need me last week. And I would say, not really. They were going to use clip art anyway. You weren't in this discussion to begin with. Like you were never going to get paid for any of the work being done here. So I'm actually kind of excited to see how it works. Okay. And to be honest, the idea of having a browser that I could use secondarily and pop up and do a quick generation of an image, that sounds kind of fun. Edge might get some use for me again. So we'll see.
It might actually increase Bing use.
Yeah, maybe.
All right. There are a lot of other announcements. Here are a few more highlights. Defender Cloud Security Posture Management and Defender for DevOps are new offerings that you can get in Microsoft Defender for Cloud. Now, if you don't know what any of those means, you probably don't care about this. But if you do, they work with GitHub and Azure DevOps to use some algorithms to identify security weaknesses and prioritize fixes, just making it easier to secure a corporate network. Microsoft Edge is getting workspaces. This is a feature that lets you share a set of Microsoft Edge browser tabs with a project member as a single link. So you send them the link and it opens the files and the websites and everything, and the tabs update in real time as you progress with the project. The Microsoft Teams App Store is adding an avatars app that'll let you customize an animated avatar that'll show up on video, similar to what Zoom offers. Microsoft Teams Premium is a new tier that offers lots of premium features. It's right there in the name, including Intelligent Recap, which can automatically create tasks, chapters, and highlights for a meeting, as well as translate captions into 40 languages. Microsoft Places lets you see who's working from where, so you can better plan office use in a hybrid world. It includes things like travel time, including traveling within an office. If you're in a really big building, that might be helpful. Places is coming in beta soon. And finally, Apple TV and Apple Music apps will be available for Windows in the Microsoft Store starting next year. So you won't have to use the web or iTunes for Windows. So long, iTunes for Windows. You're getting an Apple Music app. The Windows 11 photo app is also going to add actual iCloud integration. Right now, you can download all your iCloud stuff, but there will be more integration so you can manage it the way you do in iPhoto, except with the Windows 11 photo app.
Nice. I'm excited to get Apple Music on my Series X of all things. I always like having a nice loud TV running some, you know, cool video while music's playing and just do it from a console. I don't know. I'm simple that way. So thanks, Apple and Microsoft, for shaking hands.
for making nice with each other.
Yep.
All right. Real quickly, Stephanie, Rob, and Terrence over on the Tech John talked about this week. I've also seen it kicking around elsewhere on the internet, so I thought it deserved a little attention. CNET and Wall Street Journal both reported that the Warren County of Ohio Department of Emergency Services has received about 12 emergency calls from the Kings Island Amusement Park due to the iPhone 14 crash detection going off during a roller coaster ride. Now, the department has dealt with accidental calls when your phone gets squeezed and it automatically triggers emergency, but these new calls specifically identified a car crash with unknown injuries, so they know it's the crash detection. Wall Street Journal's Joanna Stern noted that similar alerts have been triggered by the Joker roller coaster at Six Flags Great America near Chicago. It's unclear whether those are the squeeze, though, or if they're actually crash detection. My theory on this, Scott, is that Kings Island's roller coaster just is a little jerkier. It's a little maybe less proactively stopping your neck from getting whipped around and therefore triggers the crash detection, because otherwise they've sold millions of iPhone 14s. We'd be hearing about this at lots of amusement parks, and we're really only hearing about it significantly from Kings Island. So maybe we just haven't heard about it yet, but if we don't hear about it from other places, I'm going to think it's the roller coaster at fault, not the iPhone 14.
Yeah, if there were a string of stories about Space Mountain or something, then, you know, we would have heard those by now. I agree with you, and I also have a very, I think, what is an elegant solution. On the software slash server slash something level, Apple needs to say, look, if you're in these parks, the phone is going to say, hey, it looks like you're entering a place where this can be a little screwy. Do you want to put this on a pause for a day, for a month, hopefully you're not there a month, but like 20 minutes or something, yeah, so that we don't get false positives or whatever. Just have an option like that. I don't know if they'll do it, but if anything, this is just advertising for this particular Kings Island amusement park and that ride. Because if you're chasing these thrills,
your spine health, head to Kings Island. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're chasing the thrill, I think we got a good idea for you for your next trip.
Listen, if we don't see this widespread outside of Kings Island, I think the solution is for Apple to call Kings Island and say, you need to stop your roller coaster from jerking people around that hard. It's not good for people.
It's get showing OSHA up out as a there.
Car. Like, you could look at this as roller coaster inaccurately sets off car crash, or you can look at it as roller coaster as bad as a car crash.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Either way, those headlines are bad, and they're bad for Kings Island. Good luck out there.
All right, let's check out the mailbag. Got a great email from Jeff here, who says, love the show, been listening to Tom and Sarah since the TNT days. I'm a tech guy by trade, but a musician at heart, and I love to often mix the two. As a guitar player, there's a wealth of software and hardware that makes my life more fun and easy. Friday's episode about AI for music creation got me thinking about another use of AI for musicians, guitarists in particular. IK Multimedia's new ToneX capture software lets a guitar player connect a hardware device to their guitar amp, amplifier, and computer, and using pink noise and a series of pre-recorded guitar tracks, digitally capture and effectively recreate their favorite amplifier sounds in their computer, and then use that in their favorite recording software. So you're basically training it. There's even an iPad and iPhone version covering. The software uses machine learning to analyze the differences between the real amp and the simulation to get it as close as possible. It's a slow process. It requires a very modern computer, but it definitely hints at what's to come in the future. Thanks for your time. Oh, no, thank you for your time, Jeff. That's amazing. I love that, using machine learning to train amplifier noise, you know, atmosphere to replicate it. Very cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love hearing about how machine learning, the ways we don't think of machine learning yet coming to bear, you know, like it's always up to now. It's been, well, we're going to make a bunch of images, or we're going to replace artists, or we're going to change the way video is made or whatever. And these are all the obvious ones. Once in a while, something like this pops up, like, oh yeah, machine learning can be applied to so much other stuff. And it makes me excited for the future of this stuff.
Yeah. And pink noise is a constant sound in the background. It's not songs by Pink.
No.
Those are not noise. Yeah. Those are enjoyable.
If you kick something over at night, like a can,
I guess that by definition noise. Might be pink noise.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Scott Johnson. Of course, when you kick things over at night, it's Johnson noise. What else you got going on?
Well, if you'd like some more Johnson noise, here's the deal. I do a show on Thursdays called Core, which is a show about video games. And we're going to talk a lot about these reviews for the 4090 and what it might mean for PC gamers, along with a ton of other stuff. If you value great conversation and a good time and a lot of laughs around the video game industry, what's happening at the top all the way down to what we're playing, I think you should check out Core. It's at frogpants.com/core, or find it wherever you get your shows.
A special thanks to those who support us on Patreon. If you're a brand new patron, you get shouted out and you get all the cool stuff like the extended show, special episodes, links to the doc at certain level, merchandise, all of that stuff. But we want to thank our longtime supporters too. BioCow, one of our top lifetime supporters. Thanks you for all the years of support, BioCow. BioCow in our chat room right now saying, if Pink went goth, would that be black pink noise?
You know what? Yes. The answer is yes.
The answer is in your
no
area.
No question.
Black pink in your area. Patrons, stick around for the extended show, Good Day Internet. You can also catch the show live Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 2000 UTC. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. Back tomorrow with Lamar Wilson and Sarah Lane off of vacation. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.